Get ready. It's time to tee it up with Keith Jones.
Coming up on today's show, we welcome back our fitness guru, Kai Fuser, to give you the keys to success. So stay tuned and get ready as you tee it up with Keith Jones. Welcome to the show, and so glad you could be along. It is a pleasure to get into some fitness this hour. You know, you're like, oh, again. I know I can drop some pounds. I know I could improve my flexibility. I can do a lot of things, like, you know, people listening to this show. But we try to do what we can. And we've had a guy contribute to this show for a lot of years because we've been doing this show for a lot of years. But sometimes you make these lifelong relationships, and some of these people become your friends, and you know, in this truest form, and it's great that way. But when they're as knowledgeable as they are, that's when you know you have hit the payload. And this guy, this hour, is a payload. It is Kai Fuser. He's our fitness guru, longtime fitness guru, and we welcome him back to the show. Kai, thanks for making time. I know you've been a busy, busy boy, like you always are, but thanks for making time to come on the show as usual.
Anytime. Love talking about that stuff. So you know that.
Well, I do know that. And Kai met, and I met many years ago now. Many, I can say many. I can't qualify that or quantify that either. At the Anika Academy, where he trained the illustrious Annika Sorenstam for the successful career that she had. And she still plays a lot of golf around. And it's great to see Will, her son, doing what he's doing. And of course, her daughter is an athlete as well, so apple doesn't fall far from the tree. But Kyle spent so much time with Annika and her sister, and just working things at the academy. And that's where we met, as he put me through a quick workout amongst other things. And then he has had a successful career training different athletes. So he's an athlete himself, waterboards and all kinds of things you wouldn't think about, water skiers and such. It's phenomenal. So it's not just golf for Kai, but that was his area of concentration. And then you migrate a lot. And Dr. Greg Rose has done much the same at TPI, the Titleist Performance Institute, is where the golfers go. But he has really transcended himself across a lot of sports, including baseball, and had great success there. And of course, Kai is now with Golf Fusion in West Palm Beach, Florida, along with Dylan Ross, running that empire and doing great things. So you've always been a guy. You're like this ever ready bunny. I mean, it's your energy, I don't know where it comes from. You have like 0.00001 body fat and all this kind of stuff. So you know, I don't know, you can't burn fat for your energy. I don't know where you get it from, Kai.
Yeah, maybe it's my brain. You know, we use 25-30% of our calories are burned by our brain. So maybe I'm just thinking too much. That could be too. So, yeah, I love doing it. And that's, you know, and then if you love doing something, you better not stop. You keep on going.
Yeah, you know, you've definitely done that. And yeah, you do think a lot, for sure. That brain is constantly moving. And you've made your footprint much bigger. It's not Florida. It's not just the U.S. It's internationally now. Now, Kai's originally from Germany, and those who listen to the show know that by now. But internationally, the game has grown exponentially, and you've helped that along the way with various seminars that you've spoken at and different things that you've put together.
Yeah, I would say it's been a good 30 years that I've been doing some seminars over there, you know, different clubs, different organizations, you know, German PGA, Austrian PGA, do some stuff in Switzerland. And you know, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun to go over there. You know, the enthusiasm is just as big as it is here. Golfers are golfers. We're into it. And it doesn't matter if it's, you know, normal amateurs, high-end amateurs, if it's juniors, if it's, you know, the pros, PGA, LPGA. There's the same enthusiasm, and I love tapping into that and take advantage of it. People want to know stuff. They want to learn stuff. and I'll be happy to help as much as I can.
You do that for sure. Now, I do want to ask you this question because there's a high-profile national television talent on a sports network that has come out recently and said golfers aren't athletes. They, just because you can walk this many holes and do these things doesn't make you an athlete.
Well, you know, you can do any sport without being athletic or, let's say, not being as fit as maybe you should be, right? So it's just, you know, it's a matter, okay, at what level are you playing then? Or is it going to hurt you over time, you know, and can your body handle it and all that? But I can tell you, and you know it as well as I do, since, you know, early 2000s, the game changed in terms of what Tiger did and what we did with Annika. It was 2001 when I started with Annika and threw all kinds of, you know, athleticism at her, you know, because at that time it was, gosh, don't get any muscles, you know, you don't want to be tight, you know, do a lot of stretching, do a lot of yoga and maybe a little bit of jogging. And I didn't know that at the time because I worked with all those wakeboarders and water skiers and other athletes, which are, you know, undergoing a lot of load during their sport, and they can really get hurt, you know. So being on tour since then and how it has changed and how, like, everyone on tour now has a trainer most of the time with them, full-time out on tour. You know, whereas the physio, there's obviously the mental part and this and that. It's a whole team that's traveling. And what I've learned over the years, it's not necessarily the fitness itself, you know, how much bench press can you do, how heavy deadlifts can you do. It's about movement patterns too, which is probably even more important. But a good athlete needs good movement patterns, you know, and the best athletes need the best movement patterns. And that's what it all comes down to, you know. So, yes, you got to be fit, but even more important, it's the movement patterns have to be right, the sequence and so on. And you combine the two, you know, being fit, strong, flexible, can generate a lot of speed, and the sequence is right when you're moving, then you have a winner.
So, obviously, Annika, top of her game, well, if not the greatest, certainly one of the top three greatest female golfers ever, and you can put her in the golf category in general for men, women, and children as far as the success that she had, and a lot of that is her work ethic. I mean, still to this day, she's just phenomenal to watch her approach to everything that she does, and I guess she's just that special because she has that trait that she can go at it no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, for her, there is no left and right. It's always straight ahead. And, you know, it's one of those extreme athletes. So I want to say, in general, extreme performers, you know. Of course, in business, she's just as good, and she's just as much as a perfect mom, you know. So, you know, it's something she has been born with, probably. And, you know, I'm not an anthropologist, you know, but something has to be born into that. But also, you know, she knows how to perfect everything she's doing. She knows how to concentrate on one task and get that 100%. Otherwise, it's not worth doing. And that's what you see at high performers, if it's in sport or in other areas too. If you're taking your sessions or so, they know exactly where they want to go and they do whatever it takes to get there. And they're smart about it too. They don't overdo it. They know what's good for them. They get the right help around them. We'd have a knack for that too, and that's one thing I always admire about Annika, having a knack to find the right people around her and then trust them and go for it. And that's a big advantage too. Of course, I think there's a lot of really good athletes out there, really good players that are very, very good and could be probably really, really good, but maybe they're jumping around too much. Don't trust their instinct, don't trust the people around them enough, or, you know, question it if there's one bad round, all of a sudden you question everybody around us, and, you know, so it takes a lot to get to a level like Annika or, you know, Tiger in the days or you know, other sports. You know, if you see the people that are really leading for many years and are a force, it takes a lot more than just one thing. Everything has to be right.
Yeah, we see this a lot on the professional level, where somebody will go out and shoot a great round, maybe a 66, and then not be able to follow that up with another low round. What is it if you have scratched away enough off the surface to figure out this question, but what is it that prevents them from being able to do that?
I think there's, there's several things. Usually, obviously, mental. And I'm not a mental coach, so I don't want to get into that. But mental is definitely a part. Can you control emotions? If they're good emotions or bad emotions, highs and lows, right? You'll have both within four-day tournament. And can you handle them? Can you level it out? You don't want to be too high. You don't want to be too low. What is your your flat line where you want to be? Of course, the flatter the line is in terms of emotions, the less stress there's going to be, the more energy you have. So that's from a mental standpoint. In terms of what's going on physically, and obviously you want to learn how to repeat your swing, have it down, have it engraved, grooved in, whatever you want to call it, where you can't get out of it, get into that slot every time. And there I can say, obviously, from a swing standpoint, what the coach is doing, does the player understand the swing exactly? Does the player realize what's going on with the swing? If there is one bad shot, maybe, can you realize it? Can you reset and then keep going again from a mechanical standpoint and a mental standpoint, of course? But where I come in, I teach movement patterns. And what I want to do is, I want to ingrain movement patterns. I want to automate them. We just can't do them wrong anymore. And that's a really big plus. If you can automate your movement so much, not until you can do it perfect, until you can't do it wrong anymore, then you have a winner. Of course, even if you're emotionally or something else is going on, tries to bring you out of your concept, you can just revert to what your body knows. Because it doesn't know how to do it anyway, any other way, which means it's going to do it right. Because you just engraved and put that right movement, the right sequence, right movement pattern. It's so ingrained where you have it down.
Is that all about reps? Is that just repetition in a nutshell?
I would say in a nutshell, yes. But what is the awareness during your repetitions? So how perfect are our repetitions? I can tell you with Annika, that 10 years we trained together, 4 days a week, being on tour and all that. I can tell you we always came back to the same exercises. There are some certain stock exercises for every player. There are certain stock exercises because every player has a little fault built in, if it's compensating it for hips, over-gripping it, overturning, sequence off a little bit. So now you have to find out, okay, what are the exercises we can do to ingrain that and really, really drill it in? And yes, you can do, 30 repetitions in front of a mirror for example, a straight rotation, which is a swing in upright position on the cable cross. You load and unload and rotate around your axis, start from the ground up and so on. Sequence is right. But it has to be perfect every single time. You can't do it 15 times right and one time wrong. You're almost back to square one. And the way I do that with, a little bit more highly intricate movements, like a straight rotation, I call them swing fault exercises, which really mimic exactly what's going on in a swing. It could be with a medicine ball. It could be even with a dumbbell. It could be on a cable across. And it's the same loading pattern. Let's say as a right-hander, you rotate shoulders, drag the hips along, settle into a right inside heel, come back out, sequence from the ground up, ground forces through the hips, accelerate upper body, accelerate shoulders, accelerate arms, release. So, first you got to learn it, a lighter weight in front of a mirror where you can see it and get it perfect.
With Guy Fuser, our fitness guru, we'll be back. He's spending the hour with us on Teed Up with Keith Jones. We'll be right back. Back with Kai Fusser, and a guy who knows all about the biomechanics of your body. And, well, he's on the show, so it's going to help you along the way as well, we hope. More than 30 years doing this craziness, and the guy puts you through some stuff. I will say that for sure. And it's interesting because on Annika again, she's demanding but obviously receptive. So because she kept you around for a decade, which is a long time. So obviously there's a trust there. There's consistency that's been built up. There are ways of doing things the Kai way.
Yeah, and again, it's about, you know, perfection and automated perfection. Because we all know golf swing is very intricate, and we all know 1 degree makes a big difference. So, you know, how do you overcome that? You can't correct all that much. Of course, you know, there's a lot of good players that can have a little bit, you know, uneven swing and something is not 100% on, but their hand-eye coordination is really good and they can still get something good out of it. But that's not for consistency. That's hard to stay consistent that way. It takes a lot of energy. It can drain you over four rounds. And, you know, ideally you get into a mode where everything runs, you know, almost automatically. And again, a lot of that can be learned away from the course, in the gym, in front of a mirror, with different exercises that have the same movement patterns as the swing. And there you can automate and automate and automate. Of course, you can do so many repetitions, and in front of a mirror is no ball. You can concentrate on what you feel, you know, what loads up when you rotate, how do you unload it, how do you set the tree, that energy that you generate, and is it the same every single time, no matter if you do it slow, fast, heavy, you know, put different loads on it, surprise the body a little bit, can you still do it perfect then? You know, are you still staying in the perfect movement and not starting to compensate all of a sudden?
Annika's swing looks so fluid and so effortless. It reminds me a lot of Ernie Els, who, you know, his nickname is the Big Easy. But the swing at impact is the important part, but it doesn't look like Annika is really building up any power, yet we see the results.
Yeah, I mean, that's just when everything does the right thing at the right time. And there is no speed spike. You know, with some players, you see speed spikes, it looks almost violent. And again, that's okay if you can sustain it. If you're young, if, you know, it doesn't help you all that much for consistency. You know, if you think about Annika now with her senior career, she's over, I think, 95 tournaments now won, maybe 11 majors. So, you know, that's consistency over time, right? And for that, you know, the rounder you can make a movement, that's what I like to call it, make it round, make it fluid, think about pendulum, no stress. The end speed will be there where it's going to have to be, which is the apex of a rotation then on the bottom. Just like a pendulum, the highest speed is exactly at the bottom. And if we picture a pendulum, if you want to, you know, put it in your mind, you hold a string on the top and the string goes down, the ball is on it, you start the pendulum and you leave your hand really nice and still where you hold the pendulum. But what happens if you jiggle your hand forward and back a little bit, or left and right a little bit, or up and down a little bit? That ball on the bottom, there's going to be chaos in that ball. And it's never going to be at the same spot every time it comes down. And the speed might be early, speed might be late, you might miss it 1 or 2 degrees left or right, or up and down. And that's kind of like a good picture to have in the head. You know, can I create a pendulum? And the pendulum is still the most precise instrument there is in vacuum and, you know, no friction. So why not try that? You know, simplify it. Turn and turn, I like to call it.
So simplistic when you say it, Kai, but yet the repetition of it is a whole other ballgame.
Exactly. And that's why we need to spend time, you know, in the gym, in the range, on the range, in your mind, you know, a lot of time in your mind too, and get awareness of your body. You know, I would bet most amateurs don't even know, and who knows about the pros as well, you know, no, I don't know how we could measure that. Do we really know our ways? What the awareness is there? Do we exactly know where are my hips? Where is my, you know, where are my glutes starting? What are my shoulders doing, you know, in relation to the hips? where are my arms? Where's the club head? You know, what do we really feel during a swing? I always like to say most amateurs, you know, they go in the backswing and they wake up and see the ball flight. That was it. And then, you know, something went wrong and we try to figure it out. And, you know, it would be nice to measure somebody like Annika or Rory or you know, some of the really good guys. Are they 100% aware within that, you know, second backswing and downswing and impact?
That's a good question. We'll continue that conversation on the other half and after with this break at the bottom of the hour.
The Dalai Lama. So I'm on a first tee with him. I give him the driver. He hauls off and whacks one. Big hitter. The Lama. Long. Into a 10,000-foot crevice right at the base of this glacier. You know what the Lama says? Gunga Galunga. Gunga, Gunga Galunga.
Kai is on fire. We're back to start our second half hour of the show. Kai Fuster joining us, our fitness guru, longtime fitness guru, and a guy that can break you down more than anybody I've met in my life, including Dr. Greg Rose. That was his test dummy for a number of years as well before he started Tyler's Performance Institute. So Kai knows how to do that. And synchronization sounded like what you were talking about in our last segment of understanding what each body part is doing and then getting it to work fluidly together.
Exactly. And, you know, where can you learn it best? I would say for most people, the club in their hands and the ball in front of their eyes and the target on the left, that's a lot of distraction. That's a lot of anxiety. That's a lot of result orientation. That's some fear, you know, and so on and so on. It's not a good environment to learn. That's why I really think in the gym, in front of the mirror, loaded up, let's say, on the cable or with a medicine ball or, you know, different tools, you can concentrate. You can watch yourself while you do it. There's no expectation of a target, you know, 250 yards down the road. There's no bad memories. Of course, you know, you can't lose that medicine ball or a dumbbell. You know, it's going to be with you. You're not going to lose it in the water or in the bush. And so you're a lot freer to learn, you're a lot freer to feel your body, get awareness, and put good repetitions in. Now, obviously, you need to practice on the range, but the range is practice, not too much learning. And that's something we found out, too, here at Golf Fusion, you know, having the training base where, you know, get into a training bay, hit some balls without a screen on, and just feel what's going on. Don't look down, you know, 250 yards every single time. Just feel what's going on at impact. You know, how's my backswing feel? How's my finish? You know, is it an easy finish? Do I have to manufacture a finish? A lot of those things are lost if you're just ball oriented. So there is a time to practice with the ball, but again, it's more so practice than learning. And I think that's something that has to be understood.
Well, what I think is excellent about this show already is, Kai's, you're laying it out like you don't need to be on a golf course to hit golf balls. You don't need to even be on a driving range to hit golf balls. You can accomplish this at home or in your neighborhood gym or whatever allows you to have those apparatus to accomplish this. And I think that's great because people always say, oh, you know, I can't get out to play this week and my game has deteriorated and I haven't been out for 2 months and I, you know, I end up this and this and this. But in that time, what have you done for your game? And, you know, here it is, Kai's laying it out for you, that there's a lot you can do for your game away from the course.
Exactly. And you know, it doesn't have to be long. It could be 5 minutes in front of a mirror with a volleyball and do, you know, your swing. You stand straight up, shoulders over hips over ankles. In one line, picture yourself in the cylinder. Arms are out, long and out. The volleyball is in your hands between, you know, right in front of you, in line with your nose. Get into your setup. Think about, you know, 7-iron, but the upper body is straight, so don't lean forward. So you're straight in that cylinder. you know, how do you start? You rotate your arms and shoulders to the right to 90 degrees. Wait till the hips gets dragged along. Be soft in your right knee. You should feel right heel inside pressure. Now you know you're loaded upright. Now you can take ground forces. You can push off with right heel, inside heel, right side. Accelerate the hips. The hips are connected to your upper body. Accelerates upper body and shoulders, and arms get accelerated and get into a good finish. Watch it the whole time in the mirror and just stay within the cylinder that you imagine yourself being in. Don't bump your hips to the left and right, or your upper body forward or down, or shoulders, you know, dipping left and right. Keep everything 100% in line, and that's the swing in an upright position. And that's something you can do easily in front of a mirror, even with a bottle of water, and just do some repetitions. Feel when you turn to the right your shoulders that you end up in your right side, inside heel. Feel how you come out of that. You know, you're coming out of the ground and you accelerate everything through. Feel that you get into a good finish and you're balanced. You don't have to correct the finish. So those are things you can easily do at home.
So you're talking about feel. So feel can be developed. Can touch be developed as well?
I never thought of that. You got me on that one. You know, what's the difference between touch and feel?
Well,
I have a question back to you.
Well, there you go. That's a good question. We always, all the professional golfers that we talk with, you know, they have this touch that they developed, mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know if that's, again, through repetition and such, and a lot of that is talked about on the green, on the putting green, versus on, you know, exactly. Versus off the tee and such. So,
And I think, I would say touch is more feedback of what you get back from the ball, maybe.
Okay.
Obviously, there's feel involved too, do you have the right feel for the right distance, or right touch for the right distance, right? Or right spin, or, alignment and so on. But that requires body awareness, obviously. You know, which part of your body did that? Where was your body in space when you did it? What was the acceleration pattern? We can say, some people have more touch than others. You know, if you're looser, more receptive to touch, rather than being, more on a tight side where you do things more with strength, it's going to be harder to get a good touch. So that would be something really to put some brains together and see what really the differences are there.
Okay, excellent. That's our homework project. We'll work on that for the next time Kai comes on, when he's not traveling around the world and doing what the Kai things that Kai does from that standpoint. Is there such a thing as muscle memory? I hear this term thrown around at different phases, different times. Is that a real thing? Because obviously muscle's not a brain, so it's not thinking and such. What is your take on muscle memory?
Well, here again, I would say, it's ingrained movement pattern, which is the nervous system, because the nervous system, controls your muscle action. So I would rather say, is it a nervous system memory? When we walk and, we put one foot, forwards and then the other, and we're loose and we don't have to think about what all our muscles in our feet and ankles and knee and thigh and hip have to do at that time, right? And it's easy to walk. We don't have to worry about it. So is that muscle memory? Is it nervous system knowing? But I would say it's a nervous system knows what to do, and it goes by feel, of course. And over so many years and so many steps, talking about repetition, talking about automation, that's been automated since you're, a year old or so. Or at least that automation process started maybe at a year old and then maybe gets perfected. When do kids start walking loose and easy? I got three grandkids, a five-year-old. He's still not walking like super easy, like let's say a 16, 18-year-old would be, just strolling down the road. So there's still probably some automation going on. And figuring out, of course, body parts change really rapidly at that age too. All of a sudden the legs get longer and lower leg and upper leg and this and that. It's another story. I would think it's more, the nervous system knowing what to do and letting it happen. It's deep in your subconsciousness built in.
Okay, that's why we asked this guy, because he knows what he has. A lot of letters behind his name too, but we let him throw those around when he wants to. He's a very self-effacing guy, so he probably won't during this show, and usually doesn't anyway. When we look at the swing and the training and all that stuff, is fitness, the term fitness, a misnomer? Is it really fitness, or what is it?
Yeah, I don't call it fitness anymore. And I would love to get some ideas what we should call it. Right now I like to call myself a movement specialist. Sounds a little, you know, still doesn't sound good to me, but I've been trying for years now and trying to figure that out. So if you think about fitness, terminology for fitness is you're fit, you can move, you can push and pull, and you're strong, and you can run, and you have, you know, you're conditioned and all that, but it doesn't mean that your movement patterns are right. So let me just take one example without taking anything away from those guys. Let's take a bodybuilder. Those guys work harder than most other sports, because we train, you know, since Arnold, we all train twice a day for 3-4 hours, you know. So, but we're not for movement patterns, except if we're holding patterns and, you know, very slow under high tension movements, you know, when we show off. So that would be, you can say if a guy is really fit, they don't come much fitter than most guys. But the movement patterns aren't there. There is no, where the dynamics aren't there. The freedom of movement is not there because they don't concentrate on that. It's not in their sport. So, you know, I had a lot of fit people that do standard workouts, you know, a lot of bench presses and pull-ups and, you know, this and that, curls and all that, and you know, crunches and all that stuff. But I put them in front of a mirror, and I want to see, let's say, a nice shot put with a good release, a good load, and being completely free of what you accelerate and never holding any energy in. Make sure energy goes out. You know, a bodybuilder holds a lot of energy in. Of course, we want to pump. We want the energy we produce needs to go out, needs to be set free to where we want it to go. That's a whole different ballgame. And obviously, if somebody's really fit and has really good movement pattern, you know, I'd take Rory, of course, right? I would say he's got both. And, you know, that's what we get then.
Yeah, makes sense to me. Now, you've been a big proponent over the years of what we would term HIIT, high intensity training.
Yeah, I mean, HIIT has been taken out of context a bit. There is HIIT classes now. And HIIT classes are usually, I think, I've never been to one, but they're like 30 or 45 minutes long or so. That's way too long. You cannot do HIIT training. So high-intensity interval training with two eyes, that's really where it's at, where that is sprints up to 10 seconds, maybe for a really, really good athlete, maybe 20 seconds. Of course, what it means is you go to full max speed. Let's say you're running in place, knees up, arms fully going on, like a sprint in place, 10 seconds as fast as you can. And then you take a 20-second break, just really loose, you know, and then 10 seconds full speed again. You can do it on a stationary bike. I love using the arm machine. You probably have seen that. It's like a bicycle for your arms. I use it for shoulder rehab a lot. I love doing sprints on that. Of course, it tells me a lot how much energy gets put out and how much you keep in. So, you know, obviously you can go on a push mill, not a regular treadmill, a push mill where you have to hold on and you push the belt underneath you with a little bit of resistance. Do 5 to 10 second sprints, full on everything you got, like the devil is chasing you, and then 20 seconds slow. And again, so you do about 8 sprints, takes 4 minutes, 10 seconds on, 20 seconds off. And that's HIIT training. Anything over 4, to maybe again, if it's a regular athlete, maybe 6. If your sprints aren't the same as we were, you know, the first and second sprint, so let's say number 7, 8 aren't just not as intense anymore, it means you're done. You're not at the high end energy output of your nervous system and your muscular system and your cardiovascular system anymore. And then, you know, you're not getting the same effect. And if you do 8 of those sprints, 6 to 8, full on, 10 seconds, 4 minutes, you burn as much calories as almost 2 hours of jogging. So I would take that.
That's insane. As we were with our fitness and movement specialist, Kai Fuser, on Teed Up with Keith Jones. And the arm bike, I have to tell you, I've done enough PT, physical therapy, to be pretty close, just the side of certified. I'm certified for sure. A number of levels. I know I'm certified from the neck up, but that's certifiable. All that stuff. Anyway, I was amazed the first time I did it because the therapist said, go over there and warm up. Use the arm bike. I'm like, okay, yep. Let me go over there. And I'm like, go, And then, like, soon thereafter, I'm like, why am I sweating? Why am I feeling fatigued? That arm bikes are dangerous. I'm just going to say it right here, officially on this show. Yeah. Dangerous.
I have one, and I don't have a seat with it, so no sitting down, so you have to stand up.
Of course you do.
What I love so much about it is I put people on there, and again, amateurs up to, I mean, super athletes I have on there sometimes, and I want them to crank it as hard as possible, you know, at a certain resistance. And I get them to crank. And I know over the years, I've been using it for over 30 years now, I know how much, let's say, 6 foot, you know, really good athlete, how much watt he should put out. You know, I'm talking, you know, 500, 600 watts minimum we should put out. And then we're diddling around at, you know, 200, 250 watts. And I'm like, what's going on? I know you can produce 600, 700 watts. What's going on here with 250 watts? What happens is we grip too much, the arms are too tight, the shoulders are too tight. So we're expending a lot of energy, but not all of the energy we produce goes into a machine. A lot of it stays in the body because you're holding on too much. You have blockage, basically, of an energy flow. And that's what I like to show people. Hey, the more relaxed you can be, take energy from the ground, let it flow through your body, let the hands release that energy in whatever you will propel, if it's the arm machine or your club, you know, everything you produce, let it go in. Don't hold anything back. And that you know, opens the eyes of a lot of people. I'm gripping. Oh, wow. A lot of that energy stays in my body, and now I've got to deal with it.
Well, that's a great point, especially off the tee, right? The driver's the most favorite club and the one that's least controllable, but people go through that all the time. But we see these tight grips and such, and when you think more like energy transfer, like Kai just mentioned, that is a game changer. I mean, it really opens not just your eyes, it opens your whole game, your whole being.
Yeah. And that's something, you know, when you mentioned earlier about Anika, how easy it looks. You know, energy doesn't stay in, it goes out, right? If you look at, Roger Federer, right? He was floating out there. You never saw strain on the guy compared to, let's say, Nadal, which is a power player with high energy, you know, muscle. You can play the game in both ways. And it's the same with a golf swing, too. But look at the injury rate of Federer versus Nadal. Right, and especially as we get older, I mean, obviously, you know, we're dealing with a lot of amateur golfers that want to play still at 80, 85 and still play well. They got to learn how to use dynamics and release that energy. You can't keep that energy in. You're going to hurt yourself.
Yeah, that is an issue. And when we come back for our final segment, I want to talk about injuries because it happens at the top levels. Guys like Justin Thomas, who's got like no body fat. I mean, why is this guy hurting his back? Why does this guy have all these injuries and all those kind of things? And that's concerning, especially when you look at the athlete. Yes, I call him an athlete. The golfers at that top level still getting injuries. The guy who knows all about it is our fitness and movement specialist, Kai Fuster. We're going to come back and wrap up the show, and I also want to ask him about lifting the left foot off the ground. That is a topic that's been going on since Jack Nicklaus played. We'll be back to wrap up the show.
Hi, this is Annika Sorensen, and you're listening to Tee It Up with Keith Jones.
We are back for our final segment of the show. It's been a pleasure to spend the hour with Kai Fuster. Yes, he is our fitness guru, but he's also a movement specialist. Anybody have any idea of what else he could put on his business card? Please let us know, and we'll let Kai know, and he would be super, super thankful. But be careful how you ask him to thank you, because he could put you through a session that you could have memorized for the rest of your life. It's that effective, and that's I don't know, exhausting. I'll use, there we go, exhausting. I said it right there. So Kai, before I went to the break, I mentioned the lifting of the left foot. We're talking about the swing off the tee box, primarily drivers and such, and there's been a lot of debate. Lift the left foot, don't lift the left foot. The swings are all over the place with instructors and such, and you know, it's a hot mess, and it really, really messes people up when they watch or get instructed for certain things.
Yeah, the whole left foot thing. I know it's been talked about lately. I don't know why it hasn't been talked about before as much, let's say, anyways, you know. And obviously, I'm not with a lot of coaches all the time where I get the latest and the craziest, you know. So, but here's my thought on it. Where if when you turn your shoulders right, ideally we start with arms and shoulders on the backswing. We want to rotate the shoulders to around 90 degrees. For some people a little more, some people a little less. Hips go to about, you know, get dragged along. And I think that's a very important point, that hips get dragged along by your upper body rotation, shoulder rotation. So you get usually to around 45 degrees, half of what you do in your backswing. If you try to keep your left heel down consciously, you're gonna restrict yourself. You're not getting a lot of freedom. So some energy stays on your left-hand side. I want my energy on the right-hand side so I can load up. So I would say don't think about the movement like that. Let it go if it has to come. So for some people, it might be a restriction of rotation, you know, if you can rotate and separate and all that. For some people, it might be a little bit of a performance thing, whereas, you know, leave your left side alone. Of course, you don't need it at this point. In the backswing, you don't need your left leg. Just like in the finish or just before and after impact, you don't need your right leg anymore. It's done. It's done its job. So here's a question, you know, movements like that should happen, of course, as a result of what happened before. So if your shoulders turn, your hip turns, and you feel that the left heel wants to come up then, let it come up. I wouldn't push the heel up on purpose. And it's the same on a downswing. You know, once you accelerate those shoulders from the ground up, and those shoulders are flying and the arms are flying even faster than the shoulders, you don't need your right hip anymore. Let it come along. Let the shoulder turn. The centrifugal force of your shoulders pull the right hip along, and you end up in a nice and easy finish. If you have tension in your right leg towards the finish, it's like an anchor. It's like me holding onto your ankle in the back, and it's like an anchor, which means energy stays back behind you, whereas we want it left out and far away, that energy. So it's the same thing. If I turn from left to right from a backswing, if a left foot comes along, let it come along. Don't let that be an anchor. And then the other way around as well, you know, when the shoulders are turning and the arms are flying, let that pull the hips along.
Excellent. Thank you for that. But so those of us with rotation restriction, it helps to release that left side by raising that heel.
Exactly. But again, I wouldn't say raising it. I would say, you know, the upper body and hips drag it along.
Yeah, true. I mean, it comes up naturally. As you said, I like that word naturally. You know, you're not forcing it up. It just, in the process, it just happens. And I think right there is a great way, as we're getting ready to wrap up the show. We're in our last minute. But the fact that you said the fluidity and you just do the movement. And if you do the movement, things happen along the way, right? So that's the same way with the heel. And that's...
I like to say, and a lot of coaches might jump on my back, but it's okay, I can handle it. You know, the swing is a pendulum. And there should be only two active movements in the swing. Initiating a backswing, initiating a downswing. That's it. Everything else should be passive. Here we go.
Beautiful. Beautiful work. Way to wrap up the show. Kai Fuser, our fitness guru, who is also a movement specialist. You know, come up with that word for him. Either way, he's coming back on the show in the upcoming months when he's can make some time on his busy, busy schedule. But we're just out of time. Special thanks to Herr Fuser for coming on, because the guy knows what he's talking about. But get out there and practice your game. Practice, practice, Take your game to the next level, and we will talk to you next week. Take care.